Hey everyone, Brian from All They Ruck Off here, and today's episode is with Topher Slade, where we talk about the Breg Heavy 2020 event.
He's got a ton of stories about the event. We go into how he got involved with ruck events, his first Go Ruck event, how he decided to sign up for the Breg Heavy. Then we get into the event, things that went right for him, things that went wrong for him. I had a ton of fun talking with him. I think it turned into a really fun conversation that I really hope that you enjoy. Breg Heavy is one of those iconic events in the Go Ruck community. And so I was really looking to have someone on to talk about it this year.
And I'm very glad Topher joined me to do that.
You're listening to the All Day Ruck Off podcast, episode number 143. Thank you so much for the support. Thank you for downloading this episode. I want to give you a quick heads up before we get into it. There is some swearing in this. So if you're listening it into the car with your kids, maybe switch to a different episode or save this for later, maybe for your long ruck on the weekend. Just want to give you a heads up there. Here's the interview. So that was your first Go Ruck event. Was that Air Force Light?
Yeah, it was. From the traditional Go Ruck perspective. So I had been exposed to Go Ruck as an organization at the CrossFit Games. I'm a big CrossFitter, have coached on several occasions, but we were at the CrossFit Games this last year, and they had a booth. And if you did X many sandbag cleans, you got the Go Ruck Madison, Wisconsin patch. But then they also had like a Go Ruck event, like a light little forced ruck event with some light PT right before that. And then they had the opportunity to buy rucks that were used at the, during the events. And that was actually where I bought my first ruck. I bought a 20 liter rucker with a 20 pound plate for $170.
That's awesome.
And it had the chest strap already installed, which apparently is part of the struggle of life. So
that's where the event starts, is installing that chest strap.
Just doing the chest strap. I was like, okay, well, I got this rucker. And so what I did is I went home and I recreated the ruck event from the games, essentially run a mile with 20 pounds, add 10 pounds, run another mile, add 10 pounds, run another mile, add 10 pounds, add another mile. And that was the event that they did at the CrossFit Games. And that's the event that I did. And I was like, all right, I can hang. I feel all right. I come from, a running background and an endurance sports background. I'm a pretty light dude though. I'm 6'4", about 170 pounds. So I'm built for speed, not for power. So that was quite the experience. And I learned that during the heavier events, the top, you put weight on top of me and it becomes pretty difficult pretty fast. But so yeah, the Air Force Light popped up. Free 99, which is the perfect price for an event, and about a million people signed up for it. Really fun event. And then it was something the next month I was in New Orleans for a conference, and I saw that they had the Fallujah Light in New Orleans, and I was already running the half marathon that morning. I was like, well, crap, why not? Let's give it a go. And so that complete lack of insight you have when you're sitting in front of a keyboard signing up for an event.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You sign up for the event, and then later you have the hangover. I was listening to your Nick podcast, and he was talking about how you sign up for stuff drunk, and then the next morning you're like, what did I do? That's essentially that you're like, oh, did I sign up for a half marathon and a 5 hour PT session at the same time? Was that really what I meant to do with my life? But it ended up being a great time. And then I was in December, I signed up. So this is all in the course of, 4 or 5 months. I signed up for this, the Tough Light that was here in St. Louis, because I was in St. Louis preparing for my move, scouting out apartments and stuff with my fiance. And I was like, hey, I'm here for the weekend. I might as well do this event. And that's where I got suckered into it. And I think I actually signed up for... No, you're right. It was December, because I waited until the Cyber Monday. I remember you and I were talking on Discord about the Cyber Monday Cyber Monday deals, and I waited until Cyber Monday and I pulled the trigger on both the Tough Light and the Bragg Heavy all at that time. That was quite a credit card transaction I sent to GoRuck, but I'm sure they get bigger. And did that, and afterwards I was like, man, that was fun. After the Tough, I was like, that was fun, but I don't like getting treated like an idiot, and I think Cleve does a pretty good job of making you, giving you an emotional workout at the same time as a physical workout. And I was pretty prideful, pretty haughty, and didn't feel like I wanted to go through it again. I was like, oh, but I've already signed up for this Bragg Heavy. So, and then, you know, all of that wears off and you become a little bit like you become rose colored about it, and you're able to be like, oh yeah, this is going to be super fun. And then going into the Bragg Heavy, I was more or less optimistic about the event, completely forgetting everything that bothered me about the Tough.
It's funny how that happens. You know, there can be things that really screw with you at some of the events, and you finish it feeling a certain way, and then even a week or two later, it's all gone, and you just remember the good stuff, and you're excited for the next event.
Yeah, I mean, I did the Baton Memorial Death March Shadow event this weekend with the Edwardsville Ruck Club, Evil Ruck Club in Illinois. And we did the 26.2 ruck marathon. And I put my ruck on. I was like, oh my God, I haven't had this on since Bragg. It's like, well, I don't want to. It's been 2 weeks. I don't want to do this. And so like the first couple miles, I could feel just like physically tense or emotionally tense. But we were like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm about to get into a lot more than I prepared for. It ended up being a wonderful event and really nice weather and really cool people. A lot smaller event. So I guess I had done not an official GoRuck event, probably closer to like the Star Course, but I had done the Baton Memorial back in like 2016 with the weight, with the 35 pounds for the heavy division. But that wasn't a GoRuck event, and they do it in GoRuck now. I know GoRuck has a huge showing now, but it wasn't, I did it with like my own Kelty pack or whatever in civilian clothes. So I knew from a ruck perspective, and climbing Rainier and some other like big peaks in Utah, I wasn't afraid of the ruck or the weight at all. I think I had to come to terms with how I deal with people stressors, like people talking to me in a stress setting or people not performing the way I want to. That's what I've found that I most take away from these events is after every event, I'm like, man, I probably shouldn't have said this to this dude, or I could have done this better. And maybe by my 9,000th event, I won't be such a jerk at these things.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things about GoRuck events that differs. I mean, you mentioned that you have an endurance sports background. I mean, you know, get me out on a trail and I'll love to run, love to rock. I just enjoy being out there, and I find it pretty easy to, you know, have a smile on and enjoy the day. But some of those people stressors at these events, you know, that you don't see at a marathon, at a half marathon, at a trail run, I mean, it really puts different spin on it, right?
I mean, I've seen your Strava data. You're a much faster runner than I am, but so you probably get a smile more. But no, you're right. And I think that's the biggest thing, like getting into, like, let's talk about the Bragg Heavy. That is one of the things coming away from that I recall kind of the feeling I felt about in my first Tough, where there was a moment where one of the guys, Mike McKee, you know, very experienced guy, solid, strong, really a pinnacle of our team, small 13-person team. He and I had kind of like I started it, and I just kind of gave him, I said something sharp or mean or whatever. And he was like, hey, I'm sorry. Like, I think he had us crossing a street under load, and a car, you know, got closer than I thought they should have. And I kind of like directed my rage at him, like, you're going to get someone killed or some garbage like that. And in reality, it wasn't nearly as crazy as it was, but it was like hour 10 of a 12-hour event. And I was just, you know, I wasn't in the right place. And afterwards, I'm thinking about that. I'm like, yeah, man, this guy, like, it would have been a lot easier if I wasn't such a jerk to everybody. And then getting into the Bragg Heavy, that was driving back from the event, driving back from Fayetteville, I was really thinking about how I had, performed. And physically, yeah, it sucked, but I'm accustomed to, like, you know, one hour at a time, one step at a time, one push-up at a time. So the challenge from there was, and I also kind of do this mental, like, hey, if the dude next to me can do it, I can do it, you know, kind of like digging yourself in. But the way I would respond to team leaders, if I disagreed with them, or the way I was just like not in a team attitude, like people would be, you know, from the start of the event, you kind of just, you get in there and I would size people up and I'd be like, well, who's this clown? Like, so for instance, I was rowing in the car this morning because I was listening to your Nick Schrein podcast, and he was at Bragg Heavy and he's walking around taking pictures and people are chatting with him. I had no idea who he was. I'd never met him before. And I didn't even realize he was the same guy until he started talking to you about it and being a 6'8" dude. And I was like, holy crap, that's the guy that was at this event. But I'm looking at this guy like, who's this jabroni walking around acting like, you know, he's big shit. And then I listened to his Triple Heavy podcast and your Triple Heavy podcast. I was like, well, I'm an asshole. And I could see, like, that's kind of a glimpse into how I judge people. And I'm definitely not telling you it's correct. In fact, I'm telling you it's wrong. But it could have been that initial perspective. And I looked back on these people that I got to encounter during the heavy and did like some light Facebook, Instagram stalking and being like, oh, well, every single one of those people is a bigger badass than I am. And I, you know, wasn't the nicest to most of them. And it's not necessarily from the perspective of like being personally mean to someone because I don't like them on a personal level. I think it's just not giving people the attention, like the investment, the emotional investment, whereas you'd be like, I need to treat this person like a person instead of just barking at them like, you know, an object that's making me, you know, lift more stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's easy, especially in those, you know, situations where you have to carry a bunch of heavy stuff, to forget about the human aspect of it and just start telling people to move faster and quicker and carry more. And
I think that's my motivation for signing up for more events. Like we have a couple events this weekend. We have a tough light star that I'm thinking of signing up for this weekend. I always wait till the last second to do things. But and if I do end up doing it, a major goal of mine, my why during this event is going to be, you know, to be a good team player. And I heard an interesting expression the other day, and I've heard it 1,000 times before and it's never seemed to sink in, but a rising tide raises all ships. And I don't know what I thought when I've heard it before, but it hit me. Like, I remember during the Bragg Heavy, there were a couple guys who ended up being in the ruck, in the Evil Ruck Club right across the river from me. That these dudes were just, they were having a good time. I mean, they were outwardly having a good time. They were positive. They were interacting with people around them. They were going back and forth with bags. They were doing real work. They weren't, you know, being poopy pants. They were having a good time. They were enjoying the event, or they were present on a positive note for the event. And I sought out them for, like, they were raising my morale, as I was, you know, as I was on the other side, like right out of the corner of my mouth, insulting people. Like, for instance, I was in the back of the formation doing something, moving something. And the team leader at the time, who, I don't know if this is a talent of Go Ruck cadre or this is an objective, but they always pick what seems to be the least qualified people or the people least willing to be, or least familiar with Go Ruck events to be your team leader at least once during an event. Does that make sense? Is that usual?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, and that has to be part of the team building experience. Like for my Go Ruck Light, they had a roster of everybody's name and rank. And we had kids that have, you know, enlisted guys that had been in the military for, you know, a couple months. And then we had guys that were career military officers, colonels, lieutenant colonels, and they could see that. I mean, everybody showed up in civilian clothes, more or less, no ranks. So you didn't know, you know, who was what. You could tell, and I recognized a lot of people. But they took the most junior guy, and they're like, all right, you're in charge of this formation. And you're like, oh, wow, classy, very cool. But they did that during the Go Ruck Light, where everybody, the Air Force Go Ruck, where everybody had a rank and a military position. And then they do that during the heavy, the kind of probably our first team leader. Was this kid who had shown up in jeans and a t-shirt. Like, and I believe that's actually what he showed up in, his jeans and t-shirt. Someone loaned him a shirt, someone loaned him a hat, someone loaned him gloves. People were giving him food and water. And unfortunately, it was probably hour 20 that he ended up dropping, which is kind of crazy. And looking back, I feel like that would have been a victory of mine to be part of the team that helped him make it through. But I was probably closer to part of the people that like helped him out, like out of the event. From the perspective of like, if I saw him not doing something, I would make it, you know, my mission to see him do something. Cause I was like, I'm, you know, everybody else in this formation is doing work, like, and you know, more or less, but I looking back on that, I feel like it would have been a much better use of my time and probably a better experience for me had I used that as an objective instead of being like, yeah, this guy's, you know, gray manning, I guess, you know, I'm not going to be a point of motivation for him. I'm going to be like, yeah, man, if you don't want to. And I think I may have even said that to him. If you're not going to do the work, you might as well just leave. Which as I hear myself say that, I'm like, wow, what a dick. But it's not an unfamiliar expression in the military. Like, hey, man, if you're not going to do the work, like, then don't, you don't get to be a part of, you know, the group. You don't get to be a part of our achievement. And I think I have to get away from, if I continue to, you know, do go rec events and not be a, you know, the guy that everybody thinks is a jerk at the end, I have to get away from seeing it as, you know, a fixed objective. Like, hey, if you guys don't do this, aircraft won't take off, or people will die, or, you know, stuff isn't going to get where it's going to get. And it's like, yeah, if you don't do this, you don't get a patch. And I think kind of being more realistic about the objectives of go rec and or the events, especially the team events, instead of, you know, whatever's going on in my brain during those torture sessions.
Well, I mean, it's tough too, because you've been carrying whatever for however many hours, and you look over and,
oh,
you know,
Lord,
someone's lugging around with, you know, just their rock, and you're thinking, man, like, can't you just take like my thing for a minute? Like, you knew what you were signing up for. And it's tough because those thoughts go through, I think, probably everyone's head. And at the same time, I'm sure there are people who, you know, as soon as I hand off a pack to someone else, they might look over at me and it's the first time they've seen me in 10 minutes and are thinking, you know, what's that dude doing? He just carrying nothing, you know, especially depending on the class size. And at the same time, I mean, it really is, at least the events that I've done and looking back on, they're all really team events where when someone quits, it's not like, oh, they're gone, time to dump out a sandbag because you have less people now. They're gone and you're still trucking along with the same stuff you had before. So,
oh yeah. Yeah. I wish that, and that was definitely on my mind. Like at the beginning of the event, I was like, I went over and I went because they had the event at the Special Forces Association compound, really cool campus, like a great spot to do it in. Just huge open areas, a lot of fun stuff. But they had probably, when I got there around 3 p.m., people had started to come in, but maybe 5 or 10 people. But you could, I walked over to kind of the gazebo picnic area and saw all the sandbags, saw a bunch of the coupons, and was just, I didn't let myself get too, like, get, you know, start counting weight and stuff because I didn't want to get into my head too fast. But I was like, wow, this is going to be a party. And we didn't know exactly how many people were going to be there. And it ended up being, the number jumps from 84 to 87 all around. I read Cadre Rich's AAR. He said 84. So we're going to let an official GORUCK post be the empirical evidence on this one and say that there were 84 people, but I could have sworn there were 87. Maybe I wished there were 87, but, the coupon to people ratio was we might've had 70 coupons, I would say. I wouldn't be surprised. At least starting out with full jerry cans. And they had also done some goofy stuff. They took a couple things that, and they may have just done this just to mess with us, surprise. Like they took a litter that was conventionally attached to a med kit and they unattached it to the med kit on purpose. And it was like a 2 pound, like hasty litter. And I saw some dude carrying the litter and some dude carrying the med kit. I was like, okay, guys, these go together. And I just strapped the hasty litter to the med kit. But I did this after they had already established the SOP. And so I think I jacked us up because they had those, they had them in different positions for one of the SOPs. And I mean, looking back on it, I think that it might have been the case. It would have been nice to identify at the beginning. But yeah, when we got started out, beginning of the event, everybody's all lined up. They do all the cadre intros, and you're just like, I'm not going to remember any of these cadres' names. There were like 6-7 dudes just coming out of the woodworks. And you got to know them quite intimately later on during the event, because I think every one of them screamed at me on a personal level. Except for, you know, the ones that you could tell, like your seasoned operators that can cut into your soul without raising their voice. Like Cadre Bill would address us. He addressed us as like a group, and he's getting on us about like a lack of synchronization or not following orders correctly. And he's talking just, you know, just a normal voice. And everybody was just like, oh my gosh, like we've disappointed Cadre Bill. Like our lives are over. Like how dare us? Like why would we ever, you know, not do what this man says? And then you have people that are the exact opposite, like Chewy, who is, you know, is definitely has more intensity in the way he addresses people. And, but I think they both achieve the same result where you're just like, I better do what they say because they said it. And I thought that that was quite interesting. But going into the event, Ed, they all introduce themselves, and then Cadre Nate just like, all right, go, like takes off. And I had this great opportunity right off the bat to realize, you know, why, you know, two is one and one is none, because I put on my headlamp. I'm in the front element. I put on my headlamp, and as I go to turn it on, I can see the little red light on a Petzl Tika. I can see it like blinking. I'm like, crap, like my battery is low. I'm like, I'll fix it later. And then some guy behind me, I felt like it was the loudest thing said in that formation, but he probably just whispered in my ear. He's like, oh, your light's not on. I was like, oh, shut up. I'm like, no one asked you. So I'm like, crap. So at that moment I bent down. I'm like, well, I'm going to have to change my batteries. And I brought batteries, and I'm going to have to change my batteries right here in front of everybody. The first part of the event is me just kneeling on the ground, changing my batteries. And I thought like, oh, I have my emergency light. I have another like Petzl E-light that's like a little zip cord E-light. And so I reach into my bag and they're like, ready, go. And Nate takes off, you know, and everybody starts leaving. And I'm like, crap. So I grab my whole Ziploc bag that has like half of the crap in it. It has my batteries. It has my ID and my $20 and that stuff. And I'm just like, crap, I'm just going to have to do this on the run, right? So I grab it and I take off. And see like slow motion, my $20 bills just fly into the wind. And luckily someone grabbed it and handed it to me, and I pulled out my E-light, slapped it on. And then at one of the pauses during the run, I got to the front of the run as fast as I could. And then one of the pauses during the run, I swapped out my batteries on my primary light. And I was like, well, okay, if that's the only problem I have during this event, I should be okay. I'm sure it wasn't, but it definitely felt nice to kind of recover from that. It's a great start to the night. And then I remember hearing, like reading about welcome parties in all of the, you know, many information sources that exist on GoRuck, and not really experiencing one of those in any of my other events. But for, it had to be 4 hours, we just got smoked. And I can see why on a shorter event, you're going to get shorter, shorter welcome parties. But I was just like, this is a lot. Like this is tough. And you saw some of the kind of like classic GoRuck, like, themes where like, you know, the, like it pays to be first. Like we had like a short run, maybe a mile run to a truck where Cadre Dan had loaded up all of the sandbags. And the first person, so you ran with your ruck, but no sandbag. And the first person there got to grab a sandbag, and the sandbags on top were like the 10-pound sandbags. And then the sandbags underneath those were the 40-pound fillers, and the sandbags underneath those were 60, and the sandbags underneath those were 80. And so the first guy, me and another guy, got there at the same time. And I'm not sure what he grabbed, but I felt weird grabbing the 10. So I grabbed the 40. At you know, hour two or three, whatever hour it was at a moment, I felt like I was a hero, right? And I can like, oh, I can handle 40. I don't want to like anybody to see me sandbagging, which I think is a beautiful expression from GoRuck. It's a good pun. So I grab this 40 and I haul out, and then I'm thinking, okay, that dude that finished last in our group, big boy, he is going to have to take that 80-pound sandbag back that mile. And he certainly did. And I have never seen anybody sweat from a beard before, but it is pitch black. And you're trying not to look at anybody in the face because you don't want to shine it with your headlamp. But just under the glare, I look behind me and I can just see his beard dripping in sweat. And I was like, bro, that's intense. Unfortunately, I'm not sure he ever recovered from that. He ended up med dropping within the welcome party, and we had a couple other people that didn't make it through the welcome party. We had one guy showed up in a speed rucker and like shorts, and I was like, "Hey, man, like go for it." I mean, we had some people that like iconically showed up in shorts. Like, there's this guy that I just like started like following on Instagram. His name's Bobby 5G's or something, but he traditionally wears those shorter shorts, and he was at the event. And I was like, "Hey, man, that guy's gonna like kill it in the event," and he did. And he wore his shorts probably the whole event. And I just thought to myself, like, I spent so much time picking out my base layers and my pants and like all of this stuff to see people in shorts. I was like, "Man, you guys, they're probably like they definitely had a much more a different approach to their wardrobe choice during the event that I did." But a lot of them, it doesn't even play a factor. It doesn't occur to them at all. And I'm just like, "Man, if I get grass stains on my knees, I'm gonna be so mad." But so it's this kid in like a speed rucker and short just kind of walks off the course. I mean, and our cars were parked 20 feet away, which is probably one of the tougher parts of that welcome party, was that you could at any point just be like, "All right, guys, bye." You didn't need your $20. You didn't need your phone. You just walked to your car, which was right, you know, right over the side. And, I was like, "Man, it was kind of the one guy that med dropped, like passed out med dropped. It's like, "All right, that guy's out." And then this other guy just walks off like nothing's fine. Like, I'm kind of thinking to myself, like, "Oh, what did he think was going to happen?" But he came with another guy who also was a speed rucker in shorts who went through the entire event. And I'm this guy who, like, I bought a 25 liter rucker for Bragg Heavy because I didn't think my 20 liter rucker was going to be enough. And then there's people that can make, and that's something that I need to learn. Is how to keep, and I'm packing my 25 liter rucker as thick as I can. And there's people that are making it work and having like successful events with a lot less. I've got to learn their tricks.
I think part of it's the height. That's what I tell myself, at least. I'm 6'2",
right?
And I feel like, hey, I need a bigger pack, bigger clothes. You know, everything is bigger.
Yeah. My pant legs have 6 more inches on each one. That's 12 more inches of fabric. I have thought that on many occasions. Like, "Oh, my clothes are bigger." And I do like the way the 25 liter, rucker fits with my height. I think I like it a lot. So it worked out. And I think the other thing, and you see this in the military, but you also see this outside of that, like in mountaineering, you're going to fill the pack that you bring. Like, so if you bring a small pack, you're going to put less stuff in it. If you bring a big pack, you're going to put a lot of stuff in it. Rarely ever do you go like, "Oh yeah, I bought this big pack and I only filled it halfway full." Like, nah, you're going to purposely put as much stuff in it as possible. And I think it would have been an interesting experience to try and do that with a 20 liter rucker. But from the position in the packing list where they're like, "Yeah, bring a change of clothes and 24 hours worth of food," I have the metabolism of a weasel on crack. So I am pounding some kind of energy source every hour, 2 hours, or I turn into like that Snickers commercial, like, "You're not you when you're angry." Like, that's me. Like, I am definitely, I mean, I'm a jerk a lot of the time, but I am more of a jerk when I'm undernourished.
So what's your go-to?
So coming from the endurance background, like, goos are an easy one. I've gotten into those Stroop waffles, the Hammer waffles or whatever. No, who makes those? The Goo makes one. I think Hammer makes one. The energy waffles. So I think Goo calls their Stroop waffle, and the traditional treat is a Stroop waffle, except for I'm not sure it's nearly as calorie dense. But man, I love those. Those I have to purposely go on runs so I can get myself a Stroop waffle. And sometimes I wonder if I'm addicted to like endurance events or I'm addicted to like goos, like energy goos. But I got what I tried for this event that I thought was quite fun, because for a 4, 6, 8 hour endurance event, your gut starts to kind of be like, "Give me real food or you're going to crap your pants." So I brought those little Uncrustables, like the peanut butter and jelly Uncrustables. And I got like the wheat bread ones. Like, that really makes a difference when you're burning that many calories. but I brought those on the event with those wheat crustables. And I really enjoyed having something that tasted like real food. I think that was like from a morale standpoint. And the other thing I thought was interesting, and I had this one guy that was like, "Hey man, can I," I was popping like a couple aspirin or a Motrin. I think it was Motrin. I was popping a couple of Motrin. He's like, "Hey man, can I get a couple of those?" I was like, "Yeah, sure. Here you go." And he goes, "Would you accept bacon as a trade?" It's like, well, yeah, I mean, I wasn't going to require a trade, but yes, 3 pieces of bacon for my 2 pills of Motrin. So I think I got a couple of pieces of bacon from him, and I was kind of amazed at how good real food felt, like from just a morale perspective, and being able to chew on actual, like peanut butter and jelly sandwich or actual pieces of bacon. It helps. My other one that I discovered recently that I just love are those Jelly Belly sport beans.
Those are good.
Oh my gosh. I was climbing Rainier, and I'm done. I wasn't done. Like, you know, you can't call an Uber. I was like, man, I'm running real low, guys. I'm not doing that great. And one of the girls just pulls out like this. She's like, here, some Jelly Bellies. And I was like, like, I don't really need sugar right now. She's like, well, they're energy Jelly Bellies. And I said something snark, like, yeah, they're sugar. Of course they're energy Jelly Bellies. And so I grab a handful. I shut up for 5 seconds. I put it in my mouth, and it was, you know, it does exactly what it's supposed to. You get a sugar rush. I'm not sure what's actually in those besides sugar, but they definitely, and I told her later, I was like, man, those jelly beans gave me life. And ever since, like, those are a big thing for me, especially on GoRace events. I can't eat those during a run because I'm just going to choke. Like, small circular objects while you're moving quickly. But during being able to just chomp down on those during a run really is a fun motivation. And then the goos. I have a raging caffeine addiction like every other red-blooded American. But I try to keep it at more or less, you know, a minimal during the event because I don't want... you know, I don't want to caffeine crash or get like a caffeine migraine. So I kind of just guesswork that to try to keep my caffeine intake at the, you know, medium roar for a headache without just going full on dehydration. And I mean, I've consumed enough caffeine in my life that I'm way past the diuretic effects, I suppose. But I am, you know, aware that caffeine isn't the greatest during endurance events. And so I pretend to follow that, instruction. What's your go-to during events?
Well, I'm in the same boat. I don't know if I just really enjoy rucking or running, or if I just do it for the food, you know, because those Stroop waffles are so good.
Oh, yeah. You know, they need a better delivery system, though, because I have never pulled one of those out of my pocket or my pack intact.
They're so broken.
Luckily, if you get the goo, like the honey one, or I think they're goo, that they're just basically honey with some breadcrumbs attached. They come out in like one crusty, broken mess, but you're able to just kind of like cookie monster it in your mouth and just be like, it'll come out. It's all going down the same hole. I would love for them to just, you know, be in like a little mini Pringles can. You could just like open it up and it's perfect, pristine. You can just munch on it with a nice cup of espresso, but that's not what GoRuck is about.
So. You should send them a message about that because I'm sure there's a market.
I need. Well, you'd be interested. I would just love to see people repacking their little Stroop waffle cans back into their rucks. Oh my goodness, that would be interesting. It's certainly, I wish that, I mean, and that's kind of the beauty of those the little pouches, little energy pouches, is that they're more or less, and I think one of the companies even has like a little litter leash. It's like Rock, one of the companies, Hammer, has their goo has like a little extra piece so that when you rip off the top you don't separate it from the actual body of the goo. But so I'm trying to stay on top of, like, and I'm big on hydration too, because I have definitely gotten dehydrated during events. And so that was a big thing. I don't try and skimp. I understand that I'm carrying, you know, 4 liters of water is, you know, an extra 9 pounds essentially, but I would much rather carry 9 more pounds than die or just drop from the event because something silly is water. So I know guys that do these events and they're like, yeah, I have a, you know, I brought a 3-liter bladder and our Nalgene bottle, and I have a half, you know, I have 16 ounces of water in my Nalgene bottle, and that's going to get me through the first 4 hours of the event. And you're like, oh my God, like, do you really care about weight that much that you're willing to risk that?
Yeah. I just trained a little bit harder so I can bring the extra water. I like having my water bladder as water. And then I'll have the secondary. I'll usually put like Tailwind in there or something like that. And you can get the Tailwind now that comes with caffeine. Like, that's always nice about 8 hours in.
another one that I thought was quite interesting, because I did the oral IV or whatever it's called. I did the oral IV at this event, and or some kind of electrolytes, right? And this one guy is popping those noon tablets. He's just popping them into his camelback. He just takes a noon tablet and he just drops it into his camelback. And I'm over here like ripping individual packets and emptying them into my thing. And he's just like, bam, three noon tablets. That's all it takes. And he, you know, he's done. It's like, man, I'm doing this wrong. So I actually snagged a couple noon tablets from this dude. And I mean, that's nice also to not be drinking water, to be drinking essentially, you know, lemon lime Kool-Aid during your event. So that was, I mean, and as I look back on the event, like the interactions I had with people, I take away, like the guy that gave me bacon, or the guy that dropped noon tablets in, or like these other people, like my interactions with people are very personable. And then I look back and it's like, I wasn't very personable. So I'm a little surprised. So for instance, probably the kind of the first like weakness in my armor that I found during the event was we're chugging along. I'm in the back of the formation. And this guy previously mentioned, this team leader previously mentioned, is like, hey, he says at a like low voice to three people in the very back of the formation, okay, let's speed up the pace, guys. And we're like within, you know, arm reach of the guys in front of us. And I'm like, you can't speed up a formation from the back of the formation. And I said it, you know, in a pretty pointed tone. And at that point I was like, I could have been like, all right. And I thought like, oh, that was a little, you know, that was a little sharp, Topher. Like you could calm it down. But it didn't get any calmer from there. It got much worse. At some point I called the kid an idiot, like loudly. And I later went up to him and I was like, hey man, I'm sorry for calling you an idiot. Like you didn't need that. No one needed that. He's like, no, it's good. It's good. It's good. He just shrugged it off. I was like, well, regardless, I'm sorry. Like, I mean, I do have morals. I do have, you know, a conscience, but, I also have a, one ply tissue thin, filter over my mouth. And so it does absolutely nothing to keep me from saying things on my mind. But so let's see, where are we on this event? That at some point we finished we go through, I guess I thought that we were going to be doing, I think I had listened to Cadre, your Brag Heavy Cadre Dan podcast, and had like figured I knew exactly how the event was going to go, just from like, I was like, yeah, man, I'm in this dude's brain. Like I know how this event's going to go. And I don't know if he does that on purpose. He's like, yeah, those idiots that listen to that podcast are going to think it's going to go one way. And it goes a different way. But he had mentioned that we were going to do Robbie Miller Wad. There you go. So I had looked up the Robbie Miller Wad. I come from, you know, a CrossFit background. So I'm like, Robbie Miller Wad. Yeah, man, I've got that down. Like running, pull-ups, like squats, whatever. I'm cool. And we did some variation. We definitely didn't skimp, but we didn't do what I don't know. I was looking for like a structure. Like a meritable event, like do this event in this much time or you will die. Like, and that's what I wanted. And that's exactly what we didn't get. And so, yeah, I mean, surprise, right? They didn't ask my opinion during the event and I felt personally offended. We ended up having two portions of people, one doing rifle PT and another doing log PT. And I was like, yeah, man, rifles. Like I'm in the military. I can, I can handle this bar work. Like, I'm into it. And sure enough, log PT for you. And being, I mean, I'm sure you can relate, being, you know, a newborn baby giraffe at all, you know, 9 feet tall, being an event where the height of everybody around you is directly contributes to the amount of work you have to do. I was like, great. And there are a couple of tall dudes, but I don't think at the time we were like, let's get all the tall people on one portion and all the short people on another. Until much later in the day did that occur to us to be a good idea. But that ended up being interesting and something that I have never tried before, but gave me like, well, this must be what they feel like at Buds, like Navy SEAL training, was picnic table PT, which it is exactly what it sounds like. You put six people on a picnic table and you lift it around like a beach ball and pretend like it doesn't suck. On the way down to the Brag Heavy, I was listening to the Dave Goggins book, and I must have had my head under a rock because I really didn't know he existed before. I mean, it's kind of hard to not know he exists reading like Go Ruck Media, but especially like the Tough page. But so And I think it was on a suggestion of someone in the Brag Heavy event. They're like, hey, what should I listen to on my way down to the event? And someone was like, you know, Dave Goggins. So I'm listening to his book. And that really gave me like a person, like that dude, man, you can definitely pull some drive from his story, from his experience. But he talks about like being the tallest dude at the front of a boat and how you get all the weight. And I'm thinking, I'm over here on this picnic table getting crushed by this thing. I'm like, yeah, well, there's my Dave Goggins experience. Something you definitely took from that as well was he says, like, you have not reached your, like, you have not given 100%. You just haven't. Like, most people give, I think he says, like, 40%. You just haven't given 100%. And I was thinking, like, back on, like, the hardest physical moments of my life, like, were those 100%? If someone, like, told me you have to give 10% more, could I have? And, it, like, I mean, luckily, you know, I'm sitting in my car, you know, having a good time. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I could have given 10% more. And you look back and maybe I could have, maybe I couldn't. But that weighed down on, or that, like, impacted me. So we get everything loaded up, probably 2,200, maybe. So, yeah, like 4 hours into the event. And we just march, man. Like, all of the coupons, all the stuff. They call it, like, a non-permissive environment, which is, like, you can't talk. But he says, like, non-permissive environment except to talk to the team leader. And that's another one of those moments where I got a little snippy was I said something to the team leader in regards to the event, and he goes, shush. I was like, do not shush me. Like, how dare you? Do you know who I am? I was like, don't shush me. Like, and looking back on it, it was pretty silly. But I was like, we could talk if we're talking about GORUCK stuff. And I probably said that much louder than I had to. I just wonder what other people, they're like, there's this really tall dude who was just such an asshole to everybody. And then looking back, I'm like, yeah, I know who that guy was. That was me. And you could find me in the photos of the event because I'm wearing this hat, which was my own like little victory in life. It's the Michael Scott Meredith Palmer Memorial 5K Pan Am Race for the Cure. Like it's this blue hat with the white writing on it. And I just stuck out like a sore thumb, mostly because, you know, I'm tall and very white, but also I'm wearing this like almost neon blue hat. 20 hours into an event, and everybody's wearing, you know, black or blue or brown tack hats with their patches on them. And I'm just wearing this ironic hat just to have a good time. And I that helps me when people are like, I love your hat, man. I'm like, yeah, okay. Someone else that's trying to take a little bit of fun out of the day. But,
yeah, I love that stuff. I mean, you know, not taking it too seriously, still taking the event seriously, but I mean, you got to laugh, right? We're out there to have fun. It's supposed to be fun.
I want to, and this is a conversation for another time, I'm sure, but I want to know, and you know, it's funny because Cadre Beau said this during the like admin period, was like, I don't know why the hell you guys are doing this. And he goes, I did this to be a part of like one of the best, you know, war fighting teams in the world. And I related to that. I was like, yeah, I've been through some like tough schools and some tough courses, but I know that the dudes that are going through it have the same goal as me, to get through this freaking course, to be able to do this cool job, or to be able to like get this experience. And I'm thinking, why are these like bunch of Maldoons doing this? Like, so they can, but the other thing is that this was kind of a reunion for a lot of people. Like there were a lot of people who later during my life Facebook stalking, I learned were, you know, GORUCK celebrities in their own right. Like people that have just tons of events and are just respected in the community as GRTs, who probably again think I'm an asshole. But I've earned it. So, there was one, it's probably sometime during sunlight. I had decided that instead of like getting under a heavy bag and like a heavy bag that I would require rest under, like an 80 or 120 pound bag, that I was going to pick a bag that I just didn't have to sit down and not like tax anybody else with. Cause I had done a tough where I was under a 120 pound bag or a 100 pound bag. And you know, I don't know how often you're just like, I need help. And I just felt like we just didn't have enough people for that. So I was like, all right, I'm going to grab a 60 pound bag and I'm just going to marry that thing. Like we are going to live happily ever after and no one's ever going to have to take it from me. And I'll free up able bodies for bigger bags. And that was kind of my theory, and people can leave me alone and it'll be great. And I was definitely a me kind of thing. So I grabbed this 60 pound bag And I throw it on and I'm just like, yeah, this is, you know, we are best friends. We're picking out a lake house. And just, it wasn't great. It sucked. Like, I definitely felt that thing becoming a part of my spine, but I definitely also felt like, I was like, yeah, man, I'm in this. Like, I am part of the team. I am doing work. And, at some point, one of the girls behind me, is like, hey, can we swap your 40-pound bag for this 60-pound bag? And I was like, what? No, this is not a 40-pound bag. This is a 60-pound bag. And she's like, no, that's a 40-pound bag. And I was like, whatever. Yeah, I'll take your 60-pound bag because this is a 60-pound bag. And I just thought it would be like a hee-hee-ha-ha. They're both 60-pound bags. I take her bag from her. I'm holding it. I'm like, these feel the exact same. And she goes, no, this one is a 40-pound filler in a 60-pound bag. That's a 60-pound bag, 60-pound filler in a 60-pound bag. And I looked at it later because I still didn't believe her. And at that point, I was like, man, Topher, you moron. Like, that was a big low point for me because I was like, man, I've been like sandbagging again. The double entendre of that expression. I've been sandbagging this thing on accident. Like, I wanted to help and I have not been helping. I've been taking a 40-pound bag when I should have been taking a 6-pound bag. So I gave the 6-pound bag up. I found the biggest, ugliest bag I could find and was like, give me that shit. Like, let's do it. And you know, an 80-pound bag is 50% of, or almost 50% of my body weight. And I'm grabbing the ruck. And so, and that's what, 45, 50 pounds fully loaded. And I'm just like, we got to do this. Like, and it definitely, I can see how it physically affects me differently than other people. And so, and I know that weight is relative to the people that are moving it. And you could train yourself heavy, but I mean, I don't train heavy. So I knew that I was not going to be able to sustain this for very long, but I was also pretty tough on myself because I felt like I wasn't like pitching in as I should. And there were times during the night, oh my gosh, just sounds that will live with me forever. The sound of a jerry can, a water jug hitting the pavement in it when you are like, no one is talking and you're just perfectly quiet and you're at night and you can't hear anything. And then you just hear the thud and then just an equally as loud, fuck. Like, people are like, crap, we just dropped a coupon. And that was one of the more creative punishments I've ever received. We lay on our stomachs, extend our rucks over our heads, and then you know, everybody has to roll right and more or less the same rate because you're armpit to armpit with people. But I think it was Kadri LB. Anyhow, he's like, if the guy next to you doesn't like roll as fast as you, just roll the fuck over them, which I think is a direct quote. And I know I'm turning your podcast into a PG-13, but I'm quoting a cadre, so it should be okay. It's fine if I swear. I'm already an hour into this.
Yeah, we're good.
Should I have asked at the beginning?
We're good.
Okay. So, so the guy, and I'm just thinking to myself, like, no one is going to get rolled over. And sure enough, like two rotations in, the guy next to me is stalling. And I'm like, dude, come on. I'm not rolling over you. And we worked into a rhythm where you're kind of like spotting the guy next to you. Like, you start like a half second after him. But about 10 in, I'm like, this sucks. And then I couldn't stop thinking of the two dudes, these ROTC kids that showed up with Alice packs, like old school Vietnam era green Alice packs and metal frames. I'm like, those guys must be having just a party trying to roll those giant cubes around in this like dirt. And both of those guys finished. They had a great time. I mean, they're both probably between them. If you combine their age, they might be old enough to buy spray paint, but they were solid. But that was one of the things that kind of made me laugh during that. It's like, you're getting tortured. You're not in a good place physically. And you're thinking about like, man, I wonder how that one guy with the weird pack is doing. It's like a minor hallucination. And then we get going again. Like, there's our punishment. We jump back up and we start doing work again. And we're just force marching. I think they said like unknown time, unknown distance, just like go until we get tired. Right. And we're trucking along. And then another one, you hear this guy, he's going, I need help. Look at the jerry can. Like, I need help. And then thud. And you're like, crap. Like, well, there we go again. And then we end up doing crab walks or bear crawls for what felt like 1,000 miles. It was probably closer to an eighth of a mile. But I've got my ruck right up against my throat. And I remember some dude telling me during a light, I think it was in the New Orleans light, like, turn your ruck upside down when you're doing crab walks so that it hangs lower on your body. And you're not choking yourself out. And I thought about that as I'm choking myself out, like trying to, you know, maneuver this ruck. And I end up like rolling over onto all fours and dry heaving, trying to, not because I wanted to puke, but because I was like starting to see stars, because I don't want to draw attention to myself, but I also don't want to die. And then that was the perfect opportunity to attract all of the attention on myself. I got my stuff figured out, finished the iteration, and we went on with our lives. But at some point, and the weather was great, I probably got somewhere around the 20s, low 20s, completely dry, and we just put in miles with these coupons. And you know, we kept swapping team leaders, and we kept, you know, getting in trouble for yo-yoing or for not being close enough, or like every once in a while they change up the formation, whatever. It was all normal stuff, like in relation to events, just like growing pains. We never did hit like a stride, like this is how we're going to do this. And then we ended up getting to this kind of, well, I'm probably skipping a gazillion hours, but we got to this like horse ranch style area that had like a corral and some trails, and under any other setting, it would have been super, you know, beautiful, like picture Maine in the fall with like leaves, and just, it just looks like, looking back, it looks super cool. And, Cadre Bill, you know, like drop your reps, and we went on another run. And he was like, this is a partner run. Like you have to stay with your buddy. And at some point during the run, some people just got communion amnesia and started, you know, sprinting by themselves. You know, Cadre have eyes in the back of their heads, and somehow magically they knew that we had not followed the rules. And so that was that instance where like Cadre Bill is talking to you at a very like normal low tone, and you feel like you had just kicked his dog, like very like man, I disappointed Cadre Bill and my life is over. and he's leading us through PT, like cherry pickers, which are the silliest thing in the world. Like they don't sound like a horrible thing, but when you've got a ruck on, reaching your hands up over your head is the least desirable moment in the world. Like, you want me to do what with my arms? No, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, mine's the overhand claps. I hate those. With the ruck on, it's like a mini shrug every single time.
Oh, there was one they had us doing where you tapped the back of your ruck, you tapped your shoulder, and then you extended your arms all the way. And it was like a four count exercise. I don't remember what he called it, but it was just straight out of Satan's mouth. It was, and it's super, something super simple. Like during my ruck marathon this weekend, I was doing those to kind of get, you know, flow into my arms. Like my fingers would start to get a little numb, and I'm just walking along doing them, having a good time. But you get into the event and like your hands have been numb for 4 hours, and you're finally like, oh yeah, I'm just like, suddenly I'm going to lift them over my head, and all that blood rushes down into your arms, and you're just like, oh God. That was quite the experience. And they got into this, like they really hit us with this like teamwork thing. Like they reiterated the teamwork emphasis of the event. And so they had us in these four different groups. I kept calling them platoons, but they had them in four different groups, and they had these groups kind of competing against each other for speed and teamwork, right? They were doing like suicides, and you had to complete the whole thing as a team, but you were also being timed. And our team went last, and so therefore was able to strategize the entire time the other three teams were going, and rightfully so, did it the fastest. And then the other three teams just got smoked. Like, they're like, hey, it pays to be first, like, go over to your rucks. And we're sitting down in our rucks, hydrating, eating beef jerky, watching these people just, must have been 15 minutes of just the toughest stuff of the day. They're doing flutter kicks, they're rolling over, they're doing burpees, they're doing, you know, ruck presses, and they're just getting smoked. And we're like, man, like we got lucky is really what it was, that we were the last people to have to do that thing. But that was another one of those, like, all right, man, like you feel like crap now. This is your opportunity to kind of like, you know, get back on top, like emotionally and mentally and physically, and get going. And then we were able to kind of sit around. And these are the worst part of these events, where they let you sit down and just kind of like permeate in your sweat and your exhaustion. And I don't know if they do this to kind of mess with you. Like, you remember the G.I. Jane movie where they like they put them through all this physical stuff for days, and then they put them in a room and they turn on classical music and they have them write a paper on like what it means to be a whatever. Do you remember that, or do you understand where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
Where they give you an opportunity to essentially pass out, and but you're not supposed to pass out. So we're listening to Cadre Nate's story about how he was wounded during operations in Afghanistan. And I am just, man, I am doing the nod. And I'm like, all right, like a big thing in the military is of like, if you're knocking out, like stand up and move to the back of the room. And so I'm like, all right, here we go. Like I stood up and I stood to the back of the the back of the circle. And you'll look and you'll see in one of the photos, you've got everybody sitting there staring perfectly up at Cadre Nate. And then you've got me in the background yawning, standing up, yawning, like trying to stay awake. And I mean, there were people that were successfully getting, there was one guy that committed, I'm not going to name him, committed to a nap. And he got a 15 minute nap during that briefing. And I was like, man, like the balls on this guy. I wish I could have just like closed my eyes and took a 15 minute nap. And there are other people that were struggling like I was. And I'm trying to like Jedi mind trick them awake. Like I'm staring at them, like trying to like telepathically tell them to like wake up. Cause I'm just waiting for like Cadre Chewy to just rip into us for falling asleep during the story. And it didn't happen. I mean, we listened to the story, we put our rucks on, we went back to work. But that was one of those, I was like, man, I am super exhausted. I could use a nap. I could use a shower. This is probably 16 hours in. We make it back. We end up backtracking or going back on the route that we had previously gone on. In the middle of the day, it is hot and we are losing people to heat exhaustion. We had this one chick who just trucking along, just doing work, you know, in formation, gets off a curb wrong and goes down. And she's like, yeah, something happened to my knee. Somehow we have a couple different like PTs, physical therapists in the group. They splint up her leg. They order her an Uber and they go to put her in the Uber. And some dude just like hops in the Uber. He's like, eh, I'm done. Like Uber ambulance, I'm out. And so, and he leaves with her. She's just, I mean, and her guys talking later, they said that she was real disappointed. I mean, just to her will. That was one of those things that I was like, man, if I med drop, I understand. But everything else, that would bother me. Because if your body stops, it stops. And something like a physical stop, like your leg does not work anymore. That would be, you know, that would just be tough mentally. For me, it's like, yeah, my leg hurts, but I'm going to keep going. But for her, it was some kind of anatomical failure. And so we end up trucking along after that. And I didn't even know her. She happens to be in a ruck club 30 miles away from me. But I really felt from the guys that she was there with, their kind of disappointment that she wasn't able to do something that she had trained and worked so hard on. But I've talked to them later. She's committing to coming back next year. I'm glad that she's able to bounce back from that. No permanent damage. But that was like middle of the day, super hot, and not super hot. Like in relative to the event, it was like in the 40s, but people are just not having a good time, like burning up. We're walking through, as I've heard it described, I'm not from Fayetteville and I've never been other than this, the stabby part of Fayetteville, which I thought was an interesting expression. I live in St. Louis, so I understand the stabby expression to a bit. But the stabby part of Fayetteville, and then it's a Sunday morning. We're probably 50 meters from a church, and we pick this opportunity for everybody to pee on this fence across from like a dollar store. And I like look over and I see like all these people coming out of this church. And I'm like, well, that's gotta be quite the look in the morning. One of those things that happens in a GoRuck event that you can't explain anywhere else. Like if anybody ever asks me, oh my gosh, this is another story. Like we used to joke in what I did triathlon in college. We used to joke about like peeing in public. And I did an event once where they had these cops on bicycles and they were like riding along the event and they were writing public urination citations to people, to athletes, like for peeing in the bushes during the runs. And you're like, goodness gracious. And I remember doing a security clearance investigation for my job. And they're like, have you ever been, have you ever received a ticket or something? Like, yeah, man, I got a ticket for public urination. And they're like, what? And they were like really bothered. And I was like, yeah, man, I P beating a bush during an event. And it occurred to me, like looking back at this, like the amount of public urination citations the Go Ruckers would get if they handed them out would just be, it would just be great. It'd be astronomical.
You could fund some serious programs with all that money.
Yeah, you certainly could. Like if you just follow Go Ruckers around. I mean, I've heard of these interactions with law enforcement that happens just inadvertently with Go Ruck, but just imagine if they were, if they had a police drone following you around, writing you citations based on your Go Ruck patch. The world we'll live in. There's the 1984 world where they write you citations for public urination. So we end up going to this park that we had tried to get into early in the morning, like oh dark 30 in the morning. And we get in there, we set that, we had been probably just a 7 mile, just hate march. We did not do very well. We were definitely kicking our own asses. But we drop everything and he's like, all right, man, we're doing the 12 miler now. So you guys have 15 minutes, you know, to do your shit. And there is literally to do your shit because there's two porta potties. And I'm kind of like, he's talking, I'm eyeballing the porta potties. I know what's going on in my own gut and bowels at this moment. So I'm prioritizing like where I need to be. I kind of make eye contact with this dude who is also like locked eyes on the porta potty. And I'm like it's about 100 yards away from us. So I know I'm not going to get away with not having a buddy. So I'm just like lock eyes with him. And we both like look over and just, you know, telepathically say like, we're going to be the first two people to those porta potties and we're going to hold hands if we have to. And they're like, all right, go. And they're like, all right, you're released. And he and I just sprint. Like, and I mean, and a lot of people did. And we end up getting the porta potties first. I get in there, I do my business and I get out of the porta potty and the line is 20 people long. And I was like, oh goodness. And it turns out that by the time we even started the 12 miler, there were people that used the first 5 minutes of the 12 miler to use those porta potties because they just never got the opportunity to, because they said like during the 12 miler, the buddy policy didn't apply or whatever they want to call it, battle buddies. And, so one guy, there's like, ready, go. And like start the 12 miles. And he just turned around and walked over to a porta potty. Hey man, you know, your body, you know what you need. So it's like supposedly a 1 mile track around this park. And Cadre Dan is doing it with us. He's like, all right, like I want you guys to work. The flag always has to be in the front. We're doing 12 miles. And he's not really talking about time domains. He's not saying stuff like you have to be done in 3.5 hours or anything like that. He's like, you have 12 miles. Every mile you have to stop and do 10 sandbag cleans. And they have the sandbags kind of built around. I was like, oh, thank God, sandbag cleans. I could do those in my sleep. So we start going. And I teamed up with a guy that I had identified early on during one of the runs. It's just like a fast dude. And so I'm up with him and he is cooking. And we had this one guy who just lit the fire and just took off. Big boy too, probably 200 plus pounds, just takes off with the flag and is gone. He's, you know, an eighth of a mile ahead of everybody. And I was like, man, that guy is hauling. And we spent a little bit of time trying to get up to him. We're like, yeah, we'll let him have the first lap. We'll catch him eventually. But it turns out this is one of those pace to be a winner kind of scenarios. He finishes the first mile before everybody. And Kyrie Bo's like, hey man, like, good job. You finished, you know, the first mile before everybody else. Like, take a break. And I'm not sure if he told him, like, you're done, or he told him to take a break. But the guy's like, all right, man, I'm going to go take a crap. And he just, like, handed the flag off, and he, like, left. Didn't even have to do his cleans, from my understanding. And I may be completely wrong about that. But I was like, man, I should have beat him. I should have beat him on the flag. So I get to these sandbags. And I don't know if my brain just decided to stop communicating to my body, or they said they were 80-pound sandbags. And they, you know, put 120 pounds in them, but it was just not happening. Every one of those catches on that clean felt like the heaviest clean I had ever done in my life. It was just, I could just feel it compacting my vertebrae. I was like, I'm getting an inch shorter every time I pull this up. And I am just trying to do perfect CrossFit level one instructor trainer form. Like, and I'm watching these guys just like lift this weight up and down like it's nothing. And I am just getting my, like, I'm just getting my ass kicked by these bags. And I finish my 10 cleans and I take off again. And a bunch of dudes that I had passed or that I had beat on the run were in front of me. And I was like, man, screw these guys. So So I start working again, and I pass a few of them, and I get back to the sandbag cleans, and they do the sandbag cleans like they're bags of cereal. And I'm over here doing the sandbag cleans and just getting my ass kicked. And I end up, and I'm just like, you know what? This isn't even a ruck march anymore. This is 120 sandbag cleans for time. Like, that's what it's going to be for me. It's like, I could care less about the mile I get to rest from the sandbag cleans. Every time I get to the sandbag cleans, that's the focus of this thing. And I started like mentally steeling myself for doing, I think it was that after my 30 sandbag cleans, I was like, I've got 90 more of these things. And I am not going to the 60-pound bag. I am doing 80-pound sandbag cleans like every other dude, because I should be able to. Like, the mechanics of sandbags, they're obviously different than Olympic bars. And I was just, my head was, you know, too far up my own body to, you know, be humble about that. Like, hey, you know, everything sucks for everybody at least once. So I'm mentally steeled, like, all right, man, I'm just going to do these sandbag cleans and I'm going to live my life and I'm going to catch up to these dudes. And I finished my fourth mile and my fourth set of sandbag cleans. And they're like, all right, go hang out at your ruck. Like, you're done. And I was like, what? Were these 3-mile loops and no one bothered telling us? Like, what's going on? I'm talking to one of the other dudes. He's got his cell phone hidden in his bag or his watch. And he's like, yeah, man, it's, you know, this time we've only got like 3 hours left. And I was like, what? Are you serious? Like, I was like, oh, that's awesome. And you know, obviously, even in that 4 miles, we had quite a lot of separation. We had quite a lot of people that had separation. And we didn't start the march until like 18 hours in. Did we start the 12 miler? So you're doing the math and you're like, geez, these are like 18, 19 hours in. Like, they're doing some work. And we're still 2 hours of solid rucking away from the compound. So everybody finishes, everybody's done. And they're like, all right, drop your rucks, like, follow us. And we're like, oh, we're going on another one of these weird like trail runs. That they would be the third one of the day. We just go on these goofy ass trail runs in the middle of nowhere. And they take us in to the banks of this river and low crawl us into the water. And it's just mud, just chocolate pudding mud. They low crawl you into the water. You low crawl through the water. You barrel roll in the mud. And you're just like, just people are coming out. And I'm in the back of the like the last two or three people. And we're just watching people come out just covered head to toe. And Kadri are like, you don't have enough mud on you. And they're sending them back into the mud. And then you've got guys that are like figuring out what's going on. So they're stripping down to their skivvies or they're like taking stuff off and like throwing it in the bushes and just getting smoked. And you've got Kadri Rich there just watching people. I just thought it was so funny. And it occurred to me at the time, I'm looking at his boots. I'm like, oh, those are some studly Mac V's. Like, I haven't seen those before. And it turns out that he was wearing the new edition of the Mac V1s. But that I guess it was the debut, but they had like the foliage green upper. They didn't have the black upper. Like, I don't know if you've seen this controversy online. It's the whole like yellow dress, blue dress thing. So at the event, and I'm willing to sign an affidavit, Kadri Rich was wearing Mac V's with like a foliage green upper, like circa Vietnam. And then when they released the photo of him wearing them on the GoRec page, releasing the Mac V's, there was black. So they had photoshopped them black. And I think somebody even pulled up a photo that was taken during the event and be like, what's going on? I mean, yeah, it's really not that big of a deal. Like, who cares? But I remember like thinking, like, was I hallucinating that or were those green? And we were giving him a hard time about like, hey, like, what's the traction like on those Mac V's? And like in the mud, everybody was slipping. It didn't matter if you were wearing crampons, you were going to be all over the place. And so we get back to our rucks. They have loaded all of the sandbags into the truck and they're gone. All they have are a couple of jerry cans, all of the flags, and 70 something people that just look like a bunch of fudge sickles, like just covered in mud. I'm like, all right, let's go. And we put on our rucks and sure shit, it starts to rain. And you're like, you know, we want more. We want torrential downpour. I want the rain to wash me clean. And that is not what happened. The rain just annoyed the crap out of me. So we get on this like force march. Everybody's cognizant of the time. Like, we've got maybe 2 to 3 hours left in this event. Like, everybody here is finishing this thing. That's what's happening. And so Kadri Nate takes off and Kadri LB is like, all right, keep up with him. And I end up on the flag for some reason. I end up on the flag, the American flag. And I'm like, okay, stay right next to Cadre Nate. Got it. Good. So I am staying behind him. And he's long stepping. And he and I are about the same height, but I did not have the pelvic range at that, the hip range at that point to extend my legs as far as he did. So I am doing this ranger shuffle, if you're familiar with the expression, and I'm keeping up with him. And like, to the detriment of the people behind me, because I was like, hey, Cadre said, keep up with Cadre Nate. I am going to, like, this guy's going to wear me like a jetpack. And so I am right on his back. And we're hauling along the road, and we probably went an hour, 30 minutes, an hour, 10 hours. I don't know. We went for a while, and I was not having a great time, but I was still like, I was sticking with him. And then they start giving, the Cadre gave me a hard time. Like, you're going too fast. You're breaking up your formation. And I was like, what do you want from me? Like, you either want me to stay with this Cadre or not. And I was like, oh, you know what? It doesn't really matter. Like, so they end up firing me from the flag holder position, which I didn't know was a thing. I got fired, and people were like giving me stink eyes on the way back to the back of the formation, because it's my fault that they all signed up for this event and decided to ruck at a semi running pace, for the last 2 miles. But it occurred to me that I could have been a little more realistic of what everybody else was doing in the formation. So I ended up in the back, and, the first time that I had kind of been in the back of the formation, and I realized that there were some people that were hurting. Like, I end up in the back of the formation, and there are people that are just limping along, literally doing everything they possibly can. So we are lifting each other's packs. Like, that was kind of the point where I started to like, oh, it's a, you know, hour 23 of a 24 hour event for me to realize what it means to, you know, be a team player. And I'm lifting the guy's pack in front of me, or like trying to kind of help them out as they're moving. I've got a jerry can, and I'm like, I'm back to the kind of idea of like, I'm not handing off this jerry can. Cause probably like hour 5 or 6 after we dropped the jerry cans, we lost shoulder privileges for the jerry can. So we were carrying them at like our waist, which is just, it sucks to not be able to shoulder these jerry cans. So no one wanted to be anywhere near one of these things. Anytime we saw a jerry can, you would just like, no, I'm not doing that. I will carry the 120 pound sandbag, but I'm not touching that jerry can. So I grab one of these jerry cans. I'm like, I'm just going to, like, this is the rest of this event for me, is doing this work, being a part of this team, and just making it work. And that kind of got euphoric. Like, I felt like, all right, this is good. And kind of a lot of the animosity that I had built up towards other people during the event about like, that person's going to get the same patch as me, but they didn't do as much work, and just being like, just kind of being whiny. And again, just being a poopy pants about the whole thing. I really was like, hey man, we're going to do this. Everybody's, we're going to do it, guys. We're going to finish. And, we start singing. Someone says like, hey, was anybody in band class? And that brought me back to like basic training, where you were told, they ask you like, hey, does anybody play an instrument? And then you get stuck in like the weird band formation. So it's like, you don't volunteer for anything in the military. Like, you're never the first person to raise your hand. Is anybody in band class? I was like, I'm not raising my hand. This is my hour 22 of this event. And they're like, does anybody know any music? I'm like, what are they talking about? Like, what, they got a trumpet hidden around here somewhere? But what there was is they wanted someone to lead everybody in essentially Jody's like formation songs. And I'm thinking to myself like, oh yeah, I got shitload of Jody's. Like, I've been singing them to myself like this entire event, but I'm going to get sued if I sing half the Jody's that I know. And I'm thinking like, some of these military things would be kind of fun. 80 people or 70 people is a lot for a formation. Like, you usually don't stick that many people in one formation, especially 2x2 long. So we're a long group, so you can't really get like a chant going. So for instance, someone just starts singing the national anthem. So we're all singing the national anthem, but the people at the front of the flight are singing the national anthem a whole second in front of the people at the back of the flight. So it sounds a little silly. And the guys in the middle of the flight are going nuts because it's like stereo. They hear it like there's a lag of a half second on both ends. But we ended up doing that probably a mile out from the compound, and everybody's starting to kind of figure out where we are. Like, oh my guys, we're on like the Doc Benner Road. Like, we're almost there. So we start getting motivated. It's raining. We're getting like, you know, The cadre are kind of turning it up because they know that everybody is, you know, pitching in for the last little bit. We bring it in to the compound, which is a downhill in the compound, which is kind of cool. And, you see like the live picture of the guy holding, the flag up over his head, and we're finishing the event. And what you don't see afterwards is like, all right, guys, we're going to do like 20 minutes more PT, and then we'll finish this thing up. And you're like, what? like, okay. Now, I had talked to one of the dudes, Michael. He was like, yeah, man, there was a couple brags ago where they were like, all right, everybody. They waited till like hour 24 and they were like, let's do, we're going to do another 12 miler. And I guess four dudes were like, hell to the no. We're done. We quit. We're done. And the cadre was like, nah, nah, nah. You're going to want to do this 12 miler. And they're like, no, we're not doing your stupid 12 miler. Like, we're done. We quit. So those guys quit. They take the rest of the group. They run them around a barn. At the other side of the barn is where they patch them. Like, they patch the rest of the group. And so these dudes are like at their car. And this is all being told to me. These dudes are at their car because they had just quit 5 seconds before the end of the event. And so I'm thinking like, yeah, man, I'll do your 20 minute PT. I don't care how short it is. Like, if we're really doing 20 minutes, because I'm thinking to myself, like, yeah, man, because if I say, no, I'm not doing your burpees, they're just going to patch everybody else and I'm going to go home. But it turns out that was just smoke. So we put the sandbags away, we move the logs away, and they're like, all right, they line us all up. They're like, all right, get ready for PT. And then, like, you hear someone go, they've got patches. And they're like, shut up, don't say anything. And sure enough, they pop out with the patches and they patch everybody. And that was kind of the moment where I was like, yeah, man, I got a patch. It's like, why am I not happy about this? Like, why do I feel like, whatever. Like, I got a patch. A lot of it was what I felt later on was the kind of animosity that I had felt towards other people. And the kind of like the jerkness that I had, you know, that I exuded during the events that later realized was probably did more harm than good. But then after that, you're like, hey, like, everybody did their own work. They did their own version of their best, hopefully, and they had their own personal victories. And it's not up to me to decide like what someone's best is, you know?
Yeah. That's one of the things that it's tough to kind of wrap, at least for myself, wrap my mind around during the event, especially when it means that you might be caring a little bit more. But if I'm able to carry a little bit more, then I guess I should feel better about that for myself because I'm able to do more.
Yeah. It's something I need to learn to take away from these events is how to be a better player on the team, because some people are going to be able to carry 120 pound bags. Like, I did this tough with Mike McKee and Chad Gibson, and those dudes, they lived under bags. They did not, like, I don't think either one of them gave up a bag during the 20 miles that we worked on these bags. And neither one of them was, you know, having a hard time. And they were prepared, they were ready, and I felt like I was prepared too. But I'm over here thinking like, man, I've had this bag for 642 steps, and that guy only carried the bag for 381 steps, and he shouldn't get a patch, and I should. And that, like, that doesn't do any good retrospectively looking at it, but you wish that, you know, look back, you're like, yeah, I should do this better. But I did the same thing for the Brag Heavy, and I'm like, goodness gracious, Topher, like, maybe on my 90th event, people will be like, hey, remember that one guy that was really nice and like had a good time? It wasn't Brag Heavy, I can tell you that much.
So Brag Heavy was your first Gorka Heavy event.
It was, yeah.
How did it stand up to, you know, what you thought a heavy would be versus the way Gorka marketed it? Did it seem like it was good overall? It sounds like you had a great time looking back.
Oh yeah. So yeah, I would think so. I mean, you know, it wasn't textbook because I had read a ton of AARs on Brag Heavies. I had read AARs on heavies. I had listened to Cadre Dan talk about it. I had talked to the people and just did my best to kind of figure out, like, really try to figure out what was going to go down. But the way it went was, you know, what I expected. It was essentially the tough that I had experienced twice as long. And they said, and there were some parts of that were like, oh, this is a unique experience that you're not going to get anywhere else. That I guess is unique. They're like, this is the Brag Heavy. Like, this is harder. And then you had people talk later, like, yeah, I went through this one heavy that was way harder, or I mean, everything's relative, but for me, it definitely was. It was, there was not one moment where I was like, man, I wish this was harder, or I wish that, you know, I really don't think this should be called a Brag Heavy. And I was like, yeah, this sucked. I'm glad, as far as like a pinnacle event, I went into it thinking like, maybe I'm not ready for this. And there are a couple points where it's like, maybe, like, again, how do you train for a 24-hour event aside from just like spending as much time being uncomfortable in 24 hours as possible? It was definitely, looking back, worth what, like, I mean, obviously worth the money, but worth the time and the effort. And you come away from it. And luckily I didn't have any physical things that I didn't recover, like physical issues that I didn't recover from, like, relatively quickly. I would say, yeah, I don't know if I'm ever going to do it again. I've got my eyes on the Nashville HTL in a couple months. I don't know. There's a double heavy that looks kind of tricky, but after listening to your triple heavy podcast, it's like, maybe not. We'll see. I don't know. I really liked it. I'm not sure I would ever do it again, but meeting the people that I met, I think that would be a cool opportunity to get to know them better. And it would be nice to show up to an event and have like 5 to 10 people be like, Topher's here. And mostly people are like, oh shit, there's that Topher guy.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things when you do events, especially those kind of events that happen year over year, and you have people who come back to them, is you start seeing the same faces again. You know, doing events in Seattle, I see a lot of the same faces, and it's always fun rolling in and seeing people you might not have seen since the last event. It's always a good time.
I love that. You get that perspective from the military. You go to skills or courses or deployments and you're like, hey man, I haven't seen you in 5 years. And you just pick right back up. And I could definitely see that from the GoRuck perspective. Like these people come from, and it was super fun to talk to people about like, what do you do? Like, what's your job? And you just learn that these people come from, I mean, again, sometimes I don't understand why people that have no military affiliation would bother subjecting themselves to some of the stuff that we see as part of, you know, part of cost of being in the military. And then you see where they're coming from. And you're like, man, that's impressive that they're able to, that they seek joy or they find joy in this type of stuff. And I can see why. I mean, there's a lot to say about camaraderie and the bond of friendship you make while suffering together is strong. It certainly is. And you'll have lifelong friendships with people because you went through a deployment together or you went through a shitty training together. And I can see why there are GRTs that are just so strong and protective of each other, because I mean, they experienced some of the hardest parts of their lives together.
Thank you so much for listening to the All Day Rock Off podcast. This has been episode number 143. You can find links to everything we talked about during this episode in the show notes, alldayrockoff.com/143. I think there's something like 20 links in there. So if you heard something during the episode and want to remember what it was, I'm guessing you'll find it there. Had a ton of fun talking about the Brag Heavy 2020 event. That event changes every year, and it's just really cool to see what they end up doing with it. If you enjoyed this episode and you want to help support the All Day Rock Off podcast, as always, you can leave a review on either Apple Podcasts or on Facebook. Just search for All Day Rock Off. You can hit up the online store, alldayrockoff.com/store, or you can support through Patreon, patreon.com/alldayrockoff, and there's a link to that in the show notes as well. Huge shout out to Jennifer for supporting through Patreon. Truly appreciate that. I just want you to know that. Got some exciting stuff in the works, and just know that I truly appreciate your support there. Again, I really hope that you enjoyed this episode. You can always reach out to me, Brian, spelled B-R-I-A-N, at alldayrockoff.com. And I hope you have a great rest of the week. Hope you have a great weekend. Hope you're able to get out there and get a good rock in. And as always, don't forget, attitude is everything. Keep yours positive.